Welcome to Crime Prevention 101. We're so happy you joined us this week. Over the next hour, you'll learn the tips, tricks, and vital information that will help you keep yourself confident and safe. Now, here's your host, Susan Bartlestone.
Hello there. In case you're not sure where you are, Crime Prevention 101 is the personal safety radio show with an optimistic perspective on a sober subject, and I'm your host, Susan Bartlestone. I'm so glad that you joined me today. It's always a great privilege to spend time with you, giving you a show that's informative and entertaining with the kind of information that will help you keep yourself safe. And I think I've got a particularly interesting and informative show for you today. Now, if you're not a new listener to the show, you'll remember me saying over and over again that ever since I interviewed a guest back in December who became a private investigator in order to track down the man that molested her two young daughters, I've been thinking about becoming a private investigator myself. So I've been interviewing different private investigators on the show and talking about what it's really like as opposed to, you know, what you see in the movies and on the TV. So today I'm going to be speaking with private investigator Gil Alba. And he's worked on or consulted on such high-profile missing person cases as the Natalie Holloway case, the Chandra Levy case, and a 10-year-old case that's breaking open, wide open, in New York City, where I live, the scene of the crime, as I call it. And this is the case of missing college student Christine Kupka. And Gil Alba's work on that case has been instrumental in keeping it going all this time. But we've got even more goodness for you. We're going to start off the show with our true crime report with Tricia Griffiths from WebSleuths.com, who's going to tell us what's hot on the forums this week. And last but not least, I've got my Let's Catch a Criminal segment, where I feature a different Crime Stoppers group each week. And tonight I'll be speaking with Estella Quintanilla, I hope I pronounced that right, of the Laredo, Texas Campus Crime Stoppers. Can't wait for that. And maybe we can help them catch a bad guy or solve a cold case. But now, without any further ado, let's say hello to Tricia Griffiths of WebSleuths.com, the largest independently owned web sleuthing community on the net. As well, and she also operates Forums for Justice, which discusses the JonBenet Ramsey case. Hi, Tricia.
Hi, Susan. Thank you so much for having me back. I love coming on your show. We love what you're doing, and hopefully we can, between the two of us, we can get some people up in arms enough to help us out and get some things accomplished. So thank you very, very much.
Yeah, and raise some awareness, because there are things that we can do if we have organizations that we can support, you know?
Absolutely. You are so right about that. Now, you were talking about your guest, Gil, and that's mm-hmm. It sounds like a wonderful man. He sounds like my kind of guy, to be honest. Because he sounds like he works for the underdog as well, just like we try to on Web Sleuths. Now, on WebSleuths.com, we do talk about the big high-profile cases, the Kaylee Anthony's, the Haley Cummings, all of those, and they're very, very busy forums. Now, WebSleuths.com has a ton of different forums on them that all have different topics. So, yes, the big high-profile cases, they're fun. I don't mean fun in a, you know, obviously it's not fun that there was a murder, but it's fun for someone to get on and try and help and try
right,
and
like
do
a car
something.
Crash. You
exactly.
Can't move away from it. Yeah.
Exactly.
It's horrible, but it draws you. Yeah.
You're drawn to it, and that's exactly right. And people are drawn to this because they can do something. Now, just briefly mm-hmm. to kind of describe how it works, on the Kaylee Anthony case, we have a gentleman who goes every time there is a what they call a document dump in Florida because of the Florida Sunshine Law. All of these documents have to be released to the media involving these cases. Because of the document dumps, he goes down, gets all the documents, I mean, and there are hundreds and hundreds of pages in the Kaylee Anthony case, and he scans them, uploads them, and it's all just for Web Sleuths members to our Web Sleuths members and the readers to read about. So we do really try to keep up and up to date on the latest on the high profile cases. But one of the things we do on Web Sleuths, Susan, and I've talked about this before, but I want to bring it up again in a different light. we do our best, two things, to help people whose cases no longer have any sort of media attention, or either never did get any media attention. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times we just have the families come to us and say, what can we do? Many times it's a member of Web Sleuths who lives in that town and decides to start what's called a thread. That's to start a discussion on the case. Once you start a discussion on the case, then all the Web Sleuth members just congregate there and help. That's one thing that has just made my heart warm, is to see how many thousands of people from all over the world will stop what they're doing to help somebody they don't even know. So we have on our website a very, very large amount of cases that, you know, I'm sure you've never heard about. So if you really want to make a difference, if your listeners really want to make a difference, come and read about those cases and post about it. I've received two emails this week from family members who have said that they've Googled their loved one's name, and the only thing they can find anything about it is when they come to Web Sleuths. And both of those emails said, thank you. It's good to know that somebody cares. So when I say you can make a difference, even if it's just posting on a cold case, it's exactly what I mean. You have helped somebody whose loved one is missing know that they are not alone. Now, we have something on our website called Lighting the Way Home. And basically, it's a name given to a large group of people on Web Sleuths who, what they do is they try and identify bodies that have been in the morgue for, you know, 10, 15, 1 year, whatever, try and identify those bodies and match them up with missing people. And we've had a couple.
Oh, my God.
Yes, we've had several amazing matches. And unfortunately, I really can't talk about it because of some ongoing investigations, but these people make a difference. And if you come to websleuths.com and click on Lighting the Way Home, they'll teach you how to do it. And there are so many people
isn't
out there with
something.
Yeah, there are so many people out there with missing loved ones. And the loved ones have passed away, but they have no ID. You know, their fingerprints aren't in the system. So, you know, their loved ones' bodies sit there, and they sit at their home thinking, what happened? And, you know, you can imagine what goes through their minds. Well, our members, again, and let me just stress, I don't know these people. They just come on to help, and that's what's so great about it. They come on, and they take a look, and they read, you know, Jane Doe, female, 5'2", on and on and on. And then they go and look at the missing persons lists, and then they try and match them up that way. And let me tell you, when we're able to match up an unidentified person with their loved ones so their family can bring them home, there's not a better feeling in the world. You know
I never actually thought about that. Do you know how long they'll keep a body in the morgue for identification?
It depends on the morgue. It depends on the city. It depends on the state. More than likely, you know, maybe after a year or so, I think that's usually about the time, they will probably cremate the body and bury the ashes. But they'll always keep some DNA, you know, fingerprints, DNA. They'll always keep it on file. So, you know, so you can still test, so you can still look and see, and that's the great thing about it. But, yeah, like I said, it really depends. I'm imagining, like, morgues like Los Angeles, it's probably closer to 6 months or 3 months just because they are so overwhelmed.
Yeah, but I was going to say that. They get a lot of bodies in there, unfortunately.
Absolutely. And so what our members do is they go and look and they say, okay, here's a body, female, like I said, 5'2", wearing a gold cross and had a tattoo of a bee, you know, and then they'll go and they'll search all those files and try and find something that matches. And then they'll contact the police officer whose name is attached to the case. They'll never contact the family. And that's one thing I want to stress. We would never do that. Never call and say, hey, look, we have a match. You know, that would just be cruel.
Yeah.
And rarely do we call the police and interfere only, and this is not interference, only do we call the police if they feel that there is something very solid they need to tell them. And those are strict rules on Web Sleuths, because we do not want to hinder, we want to help. So your guest is coming on, and he is a private detective, and he's got that detective blood in him just like everybody else mm-hmm. does. Well, you don't need to leave your home to become a detective and to make a difference. Go to websleuths.com. Join us in our Lighting the Way Home group, and you will see a group of people that will it leaves me humbled just to be there and watch what they do. I couldn't do it. They're brilliant. They're brilliant in what they do, and they'll teach you how to do it. Again, Web Sleuths is free. Doesn't cost a thing. We just want people to get involved because I firmly believe with my heart and soul, Susan, that everybody out there is important and they have something to offer. It doesn't matter, even if they just come on and post, their opinion is important to us, and we want to work with them. One thing I want to stress, though, Web Sleuths is not like the other forums, if you've ever been on them, where you can call each other names and swear and go off topic. We're very strict. We have 24-hour moderation, and so all you need to do is follow the rules, which is basically be polite, don't attack anybody, and stay on topic. That's all you have to do, and you will have a wonderful experience at Web Sleuths. So, Susan, encourage your listeners, if they want to help and make a difference
Absolutely.
And be a PI and have it not cost a penny, come
right.
to websleuths.com.
Add your voice to the forums. You can make a difference. And Web Sleuths has lots of great crime prevention information
mm-hmm.
there, too, including, I'm hoping, links to the show, to
oh,
the
absolutely.
Crime Prevention 101 show.
Yes,
all right.
We do.
Well, Tricia, we've come to the end of another great segment. Thank you so much, as always. And we're
going to
be talking. We're going to talk again next week with you. Now, my wonderful audience, what do I need from you right this moment? Well, I need you to stay tuned, because when we come back, we'll be talking about how to find missing persons and what to do if someone that you know goes missing. You're not going to want to miss this.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, How to Respond to Danger in 20 Seconds or Less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com. You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. Susan would like to remind you that no absolutes exist in a crime scenario, and no advice can possibly address every variable. Each situation should be evaluated individually and responded to in a way you instinctively judge best. It's Susan's aim on this show to provide you with the information and options that will help you make that instinctive assessment quickly and safely. And if you're already a survivor of the kind of crime we're talking about on the show today, or any other crime for that matter, please remember that there are no right or wrong responses in a criminal encounter, and nothing that happened to you was your fault. Even if you think you used bad judgment in a situation and left yourself vulnerable, that's never an excuse for a crime or for violence. So please, call yourself a survivor, not a victim, and understand that with time, distance, and the proper professional help, you can put what happened into perspective and get on with your life. If you'd like to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, send your comments to solutions@fightsafe.com, and Susan may address some of them on future shows. That email address again, solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101.
Hello, Susan Bartlestone here, and there's plenty of show left to tune in for. So if you're on Twitter, why not send out a tweet about us or give out an IM or post it on Facebook, you know, whatever, just to get, just so people can tune in and not miss this wonderful show. And, you know, you can follow me on Twitter and Facebook, too. And I would absolutely love to have you as a friend. Now, let's meet my first guest, private investigator Gil Alba. And Gil has had a very distinguished 28-year career with the New York City Police Department. He attained the rank of first-grade detective, and he worked with the Major Case Squad, the FBI, the NYPD Task Force, and specializing in difficult and unusual cases. In 1998, he founded Alba Investigations, his company, where he specializes, among many other areas, in complex white-collar crimes and money laundering investigations, kidnapping and abductions, and missing persons with unusual circumstances, such as the high-profile kidnapping case of businessman Harvey Weinstein some years ago, and where Gil was instrumental in the arrest of the kidnappers and the return of the $3 million ransom. He's been featured in a variety of media, including TV shows such as 48 Hours, 2020, America's Most Wanted, my favorite show, CNN, Fox News, NBC, Court TV, and now we've got him on Crime Prevention 101. So welcome, Gil.
Susan, thanks. I appreciate it, and thanks for having me on the show. It's my pleasure.
Oh, it's truly a pleasure for me. So, now, Gil, you've worked on so many high-profile cases, and I was talking before about how I want to do what you do. I want to help find these people and solve these cases, and you've worked on so many of them. Let's talk a little bit about a couple of the cases that you had some involvement with, and then I want to talk to you about what to do if someone goes missing. So you did some work with on the Natalie Holloway case. Talk about that a little bit.
Well, missing persons with unusual circumstances means that missing, and I can tell when they come to me, that it's really something happening in their family, meaning they didn't run away, that something happened to them, and most likely something drastic happened to them. And most of the time, still I can't find a lot of them. And it's really, I don't do that many cases because these are really complicated cases. But I started getting, people from all over the country came to me and asked for my help or at least my opinions or recommendations. And many of the stations asked me as a guest speaker. And on the Natalie Holloway case, so I was on TV a lot with that and spoke to all the private investigators involved and the families and the attorneys. So that's one of the cases, and that was a high-profile case, all over the country and on cable news.
Now, when you and I were talking, you were saying that people like this, cases like this is with unusual circumstances, take years, actually,
That's why they call me, because they turn into cold cases. So, some started in 1995. I'm working on one. The other one's 1998. Another one's 2001. And some happen right away. And there's one or two that I returned safely. So that worked out pretty well.
Oh, good. Let's talk about some of those in a few minutes. I just want to. What's your opinion on this Natalie Holloway case? Everyone's asked you. What do you think's going on there?
Well, I mean, I don't really know how she died, but what's his name that was with her at the time is definitely had something to do with her and her disappearance. Whether he did something on purpose to her or killed her on purpose, it's my opinion that he had something to do with that, and only him. And I don't think the other two guys were involved. And basically, he was on the beach with her, and I don't know, he's saying it was rough sex, or I guess he didn't say anything really, but she disappeared, and definitely he's the one that's the person of interest on this case.
Now, is he the one that fled the country, and he's now in Europe somewhere? Is that the one?
Yeah, he didn't really flee the country because that's Amsterdam or Dutch, and that's part of it. So he went there to go to school. So he was 18 years old at the time. And he left. Yeah, and he went through a lot of interviews, and you know everybody interviewed him, and you know he's a tough kid. And he never gave in, and never. They really don't have any evidence because they can't find her body, and they don't have anything, any traces of anything. And that's the problem with these missing persons cases, is that you need the evidence, attached to that other person. So for Natalie Holloway, you would need, if you don't have her body, you would need some kind of hair sample, some kind of blood, anything like that, any scratches that he would have on, maybe if you had her nails, anything with her, but she's not around, so you can't, nobody ever found her body. So there's really no evidence, and that's why the cases are so tough, and that's why that lasted a long time.
It doesn't sound so promising either in terms of getting a resolution to this case.
Well, the difference with me and the police department or anybody else is the luxury to have a case for a long time. That particular case, Natalie Holloway, you have absolutely nothing on that case. Yet, I'm certain because he's 18 years old, now he's 20, 21, 22. A person like that is going to tell somebody at some point, and that's when they're going to get him. My mind, there's no doubt that he's actually got a big mouth and he can't help himself. So I know he's going to say something, and I know that's why every day in the papers, I won't be surprised if they arrest him at some point.
Interesting. You know, he'll having a couple of beers or something in a bar in Amsterdam and start spilling his guts to somebody.
Or another girl or something like that. Mm-hmm. Girlfriend or anybody else. So he's really primed for that, to talk like that. And I see his personality. So he, but you know, all these guys that murder somebody, their suspects, they all have this certain demeanor about them, and like, you can't get me, and they're so arrogant that, you know, I got rid of her body, or you'll never find it, so you're never going to get me. So they have that attitude about them, and that's almost every one of them that I have that are still missing, and these people are party of interest. So they all have that certain demeanor.
Now, there's a big case in New York City that you are very closely involved with, a young college student, a 10-year-old case, and it's been hitting the newspapers and so forth, the Christine Kupka case. You were hired by the family. Talk a little bit about that case, because you were really instrumental in keeping this going.
Yeah, I did a lot in that case. Now, she was 28 years old. She went missing October 24th, 1998. Her professor from college, she got pregnant. She was 5 months pregnant, and he actually, you know, lied to her, and he got married, and he didn't tell her. And at some point, he came and picked her up on that day. He came back, and she disappeared from that point. The sister, of course, the sister of Christine Kupka, the one that went missing, right away thought that the guy killed her. So he got a lawyer right away, so they couldn't get any search warrant to search his car, search his house, or anything like that, because he got a lawyer right away. But the more I investigated that case, it took me a while, and it brought me to a garage in Queens. One of his cousins owned the garage. So I feel like, he had help. You know, I believe he had help in getting, in killing her and getting rid of her body. And I think they killed her at that garage. And did they bury her body in there? I'm not too sure. But as we speak right now, 10 or 12 years later, we're actually selling the garage because they finally sold it without trying to tell anybody. And the detective found out about it, and he's doing a full-fledged search as we speak now. So they have a crime scene unit. They have anthropologists there. They have all kinds of people searching and trying to get evidence and finding anything. And if they find anything of hers, of course, that's enough probable cause to make an arrest. So, but the persons of interest now, took off. They live in Florida, and now that this is happening, of course, the press is trying to get a hold of them, and they took off someplace, so it's not easy to get a hold of them now.
Yeah, and that's another complication when they leave the state, and you're dealing with all sorts of jurisdictional things to try and get these people to talk to them and whatever. Just kind of a point of interest, where do you start on a case like this? How do you investigate something? I mean, talk about,
well,
like, the methods. The method that you use.
I do, for other private investigators and other people that want to get involved with these families to help the families, because really I'm helping the families. And really, if I can't help everybody, but the families that I do help they have their first thing is they say is that I'm the only one that listened. You know, they're so frustrated mm-hmm. with everything and everybody, the police and everything. So I sit there and I listen, and that's the biggest thing for them, that they have somebody that they can listen to. And, you know, when I do these cases, they send me testimonials, and one of their testimonials, the first line would be, that I saved their life. Not that I saved their sisters, mm-hmm. their daughters, or who's ever missing. I saved their life, meaning that, you know, they were going crazy because this happening, and now they got somebody to talk to and somebody to direct their case, and it makes a big difference. So, it's my pleasure to help the families first, and really, then we go after the case and see what we can get. But I kind of teach the families how to have control of their own destiny with their own cases, so they don't feel really frustrated, and I get them involved in the case. Not that they should go out to the case, but I get them involved, and they do all the work. They do all the background check. They know what's going on in their case, so they can talk to the police and ask them what to do. And this way they don't get so frustrated because some of the laws, you can't do anything. I mean, here you know somebody killed your sister, and he gets a lawyer, and they can't even talk to him, and you know he did it. So, you can see how frustrated something like that is. Mm-hmm. So, first thing I do, I have seminars on how to teach other private investigators and other people, is of course...
I'm taking that seminar. When's your next one?
Okay. All right. Well, I'll let you know anyway. So,
okay.
It may be in May sometime, so I'll let you know when that is.
Okay.
But anyway... how you get started, of course, is like, you know, there's somebody missing, and there's not that many cases like this is enough, but missing, a college kid goes missing or something else happens and the families are desperate. You can go to the families and give them your help. And say you would help them. It's funny with the families now. You can go to some people and you say, listen, I'll help you. Here's who I am. I was a detective in New York. I'll help you with your case. And they come and they don't really know how other people want to help people. So you could volunteer and help them. And these families would say, well, why are you helping me? What do you want? You want money or you want something? So, I don't go to the families. If they ask me, then they're looking for my help. And really, just the mere fact that I'm involved in their case is a big thing. And of course, then I have full control of the case, and whatever I say goes with them. And it's so much easier to do the case that way. And when you have the family gives you permission to do something. Now, some of these cases I do across the country, they pay for my expenses, but I do it for nothing, basically, mm-hmm. pro bono. So, it gets time consuming. And even some of the stuff I do, I have to pay myself. So it's expensive. So it's really not that easy to get involved. But once you do a case like this, which is once they do a missing persons case, you deal with the police, you deal with the media, you deal with the families, and it's a lot of psychological stuff that you have to deal with the families, with the police, with the media, and then do the investigation. And it's a different kind of investigation than the police are doing. And then you go out and go out and talk to people, and you're a private investigator. So going out and talking to people, whether they're suspects or witnesses and all that. So, it takes the ability to talk to somebody, and that sometimes is not easy. You have to develop that. Now, I feel like I can talk.
Gil, hold on tight. We're coming up on a break. We've got much more to talk to you about when we come back, and you can find out more information about Gil at his website, www.gilalba.com. That's ALBA. And I'm actually going to link to his website from my crimeprevention101.com blog site. Also coming up, what to do if someone you know goes missing. So stay tuned.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah!
If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, how to respond to danger in 20 seconds or less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
This is Crime Prevention 101. Thanks for tuning in today. And don't forget to check out crimeprevention101.com, where you can find out more information about show topics and my wonderful guests. We're talking with private investigator Gil Alba, and we're talking about working on these high-profile and or not-so-high-profile missing persons cases, and this particular one that's really coming to a head in New York City about now, missing a person, Christine Kupka, 10 years. And I wanted to kind of get an idea of where you start an investigation. After you've talked to the family and you've enlisted their cooperation and you've told them to do certain things, which we're going to talk about also, what people can do, where do you start investigating? Do you look for videotapes? Do you look for medical records? I mean, I wouldn't even know how to begin to try and dig up information.
Yeah, all that stuff you have to do, definitely. But the most important thing is people. People are the ones that commit the crime. People are the ones that are involved. So people is the most important. Interviewing people and getting the most out of people.
People? How do you know where to start with people? Like shop owners? Where do you start?
Okay. So here you have a crime and a person is missing. You start right from where, you put a bullseye right from where that person went missing. And you stay right there and interview everybody as close to that person as possible, whether it's
now,
the family.
Do they know where Christine Kupka was missing? Where was she missing?
She left her, he picked her up at her house in Brooklyn. So,
okay.
I started there, and I put a bullseye right there, and I didn't move off from there. So I didn't go for anybody. I started, you know, because you got to start with a clean slate. You can't put any predetermined thoughts in your head. So right from there, I started with her, and I found out, like, who is she? Who are her friends? Why would she go missing? And everything about her, basically, from childhood
okay.
and everything. And you start with her, and you start with the family. So you don't move from there. And once that starts, you start to develop a story about her and her demeanor and who she was.
Okay. And then you found out that she was involved with this college professor. You know, he wasn't a criminal or anything.
Yeah, that took me a while. What I did in this case, because now I'm a private investigator instead of a police officer, and, you know, some of the questions you're asking me, of course, are hard to say in a sentence, but they're kind of complicated. But, well, one of the things that I did, of course, is not take anybody's word and find out what is going on. Why did she disappear and who did it? And I started with her friends and her friends and her family. And if they're all willing to take a polygraph or a lie detector test, then I'm fine with that. That's including the sister and her husband and his boyfriend, former boyfriends, everybody. So I started with that. I searched all their houses. I searched where she went missing. I did everything first before blaming anybody or focusing on anybody. One thing you do when you start a case is never focus on one thing. So the family tells me this is what happened to her. I didn't do that right away. I learned everything about her first, the family first, and then what happened. So it took me maybe a couple of months before, you know, I eliminated everything. And then, you know, slowly it came to a head where everything came to this one, you know, the professor who's a dentist now, Dr. Darsh Prasad is his name.
And he's now a dentist in Florida?
Yeah. Yeah.
Oy vey. Oh, God.
Well,
he's still married? He was pretending not to be married, I guess, when he was seeing Christine? Well,
he got married during that time. And in fact, the suspect's wife, girlfriend called Christine up, you know, and they had conversations back and forth. So at some point, the dentist called up Christine Cooper and said, listen, I'm leaving, and she was 5 months pregnant. She said, I don't really need you. I just want you to sign. You know, I need a father to this thing. So he said, listen, I'm leaving, and I'm getting an apartment in Queens. Could you help clean the apartment? So Christine Cooper called her sister up and left a message on the machine saying, listen, I'm going to Rudy's house to clean his apartment. And from that time on, she disappeared.
That's why he became a person of interest, let's say, so to speak.
At that time, because then the family said he did it. But, you know, right away, the police have to, just because somebody says he did it, I mean, you got to prove it somehow. And because the sister went into the police department, even though it's New York City, they really didn't take the case right away. And really, that's one of the points I wanted to tell you about, is that somebody's missing in your family, and you know they didn't run away, or they're not a runaway, or something happened, and you know it's something desperate, you go to the police, I don't care where you live, and you tell them what happened, and you don't walk out of there until something is done. So there's no 24-hour period, there's no 10-hour period, don't wait until he comes back, or he's out shopping, or they're out shopping, or maybe they went to their friends, maybe they got drunk. You know when something happens to your family, and sometimes, you know, you make a mistake, and they come back, or something happens, but most of the time, when you get that feeling that something happened, you go to the precinct, police department, and make sure they take that complaint right away.
Now, that's Gil, you know, on your website, which has a lot of great articles and information, there's one article that says what to do in missing persons cases, and this is the very first thing that you talk about in this article, that you go to the police precinct. And there is no 24-hour rule. You don't. This is just like what, like a custom or something that they don't want to wait 24 hours. And you can insist that they start an investigation right away.
Definitely, you have to. Okay, because they're going to say, you know, you go in and say, listen, my daughter, you know, she's going to college and she's 22 when she was on campus and she disappeared. Or, you know, she was supposed to come home today and she didn't come home. I didn't hear from her for 6 hours, 10 hours, 2 days or something like that. And you know that this is from the norm, and you know in your heart that something happened to her. You go to the police station, I don't care where it is, and you tell them this happened. Now, what are they going to say? They're going to say, well, listen, you're going to have to wait. You don't say, no, I'm not going to wait. I'm going to wait here until you take that report, until you start looking, okay? Because a lot of them are going to say they're out someplace doing something, but you have to, as that person, because you know you're the mother or the father or the sister, you know something happened to them drastically. Mm-hmm. So you have to go and you make a report.
I think that's very important. This is not a law. This is just like a custom. And speak to a detective. All right. Now, you also say here, insist that the missing person's information is entered into the NCIC database. Now, what is that?
Right now, you know, even I am testifying in front of a legislator that try to change laws on missing persons, you know, how the police would take it, how medical examiners would take DNA and send it to a lab and send it to a location, a central location in the United States, where they take all these missing persons information. And that's one of the things I'm trying to change and trying to get grants for to set up these databases and where they still, you know, the DNA and where they have, where, you know, you find a body and then you can identify it somehow, because right now you can't. So that's one of the things that you have to, you know, send in the whatever you have, the DNA, whatever information you have, and you send it to that database, that's missing persons database, and at least they have a record there. And, you know, if a body's found any place, they would know about it, and they could take quick steps in helping.
Excellent. All right. And then you say, now, bring a list of the names and phone numbers of the family and friends, the job address, the doctor and dentist phone numbers, I guess for medical records, right?
Yeah.
Phone address, tapes, journals, letters, any pertinent information you want. Everything.
That's true. Why would you say dental records? What do you think?
Because they can identify a dead body from the dental records, right?
Yeah, that's one of the reasons, right. So they can tell.
Or even a bite mark, right? Even a bite mark in somebody.
Perfect.
If the person fought, right?
That's great. So they've been doing that. And, yeah, that's one of the reasons for that. So you bring everything to the police and give them all right away, because all this is going to happen at some point if they're missing. But you don't want it to happen 2 weeks down the line or a month and nothing happening, because the first 48 hours are really, really important in the case. And, mm-hmm. and that has to get done. But, you know, a lot of police departments throughout the country, and especially, I mean, you know, any place you go, some of them, you go to, you know, in the police station, you walk in and say that they're missing and maybe murdered, they don't know what to do, or they don't even know how to react to that. So they may put it off, or, you know, there's very few people that would take that right away without saying no. So you have to bring all the stuff in, make sure they do it, and really, if they don't, then you call the press, and you call your senator, you call lawyers, you get everything, you know, to start this with. So you have to take action.
Yeah, this way they'll know, that the police will know that you're not just a hysterical parent or family member, that you're serious about it, you've thought about it, and you're insisting on this help. I think that's a great idea. You also say you tell people how to make a flyer and what to put on the flyer here, and also where to distribute the flyer. This is a really great article, Gil. How to distribute the missing persons flyer.
You know what's funny? When you have a flyer, sometimes even the police, they would go and show the flyer. And you give me any flyer, people have been missing for 20 years, I'll go around, and somebody's going to say, I saw them yesterday or saw them today. They were in this mm-hmm. corner. They were eating here. They were getting gas there. So even the police can get fooled by that, because people want to get involved. People want to help. So they say these things. And, you know, they say, I saw somebody who looks like that's probably them. In their head, they believe it. So, you know, you take that seriously, and it's really, that's a common thing that happens all the time.
Absolutely.
So sometimes the family does their own investigation, they get sidetracked in these things, so you have to be careful of that also.
Mm-hmm. Now, this article also gives you a list of the people to contact, how to document information. It's a really thorough list of things to do if you have this problem. Gil, I can't believe it. We've run out of time. How can people get a hold of you if they need to? Want to ask your advice about something?
Yeah, they can go to my website. Anybody needs help with anything, you know, I do everything across the board. So anybody needs help out there, and hopefully nobody has this problem, you know, somebody in their family missing, because you can't think of something so horrible
right.
that there's no closure.
You do many other kinds of work, too, background checks and all sorts of industrial things. Well, Gil, thanks so much for being with me today. And I've got such interesting stories, and I know I learned a lot today. Now, coming up, I'm going to be talking with one of the Crime Stoppers groups, and we'll be talking with Estella Quintanilla from Laredo, Texas, and she's with the Campus Crime Stoppers. We'll be right back.
Talk, talk, talk. That's all we do is talk.
Yeah! If you'd like to talk, call us toll-free right now at 1-866-472-5787. 1-866-472-5787.
That's it.
VoiceAmerica.com.
After more than 17 years' experience teaching safety skills to thousands of women and men, crime prevention and personal safety expert Susan Bartlestone concluded that by thinking and responding quickly, ideally within 20 seconds, potentially violent criminal encounters can be prevented. Using techniques from many different disciplines and illustrated by 60 real-life examples and success stories, Susan shows how it's done in her new book, Think Fast and Prevent a Violent Crime, How to Respond to Danger in 20 Seconds or Less. Check out www.crimeprevention101.com for more information.
Ask the experts. Call toll-free right now, 1-866-472-5787.
Hello?
And ask our all-star team to answer your question. That's 1-866-472-5787.
Thank you for calling.
VoiceAmerica.com.
You're listening to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone. We invite you to share your stories, tips, or suggestions for topics you'd like us to cover, and Susan will address some of these on future shows. Send your story or idea to solutions@fightsafe.com. That email address again is solutions@fightsafe.com. Now, back to Crime Prevention 101 with Susan Bartlestone.
Hello there. This is Susan Bartlestone, and I just want to remind you that Crime Prevention 101 is available on iTunes. You don't have to be at your computer. You can take me with you on your iPod, on your cell phone, your iPhone, anything at all. So make sure to check us out there. Now, I want to introduce you to Estela Quintanilla. I'm pronouncing that pretty good, I think, from Laredo, Texas. And Estela began her Crime Stoppers career in 1996 when she became the Laredo ISD Campus Crime Stoppers Coordinator. And she is also presently the Texas Region Director of Crime Stoppers USA, which is, I've talked with many of the people from Crime Stoppers USA. It's just such a great organization. In 2002, she won the Texas Campus Coordinator of the Year Award for outstanding work with Campus Crime Stoppers. So welcome. Is it Estela? Or?
Yes, that's fine. Estella's fine.
Yep. Welcome, Estela. Now, for those who don't know, just talk a little bit about what Crime Stoppers is and what the Campus Crime Stoppers is.
Right. Crime Stoppers is an organization that is for people to turn in tips anonymously without fear of retaliation and also be eligible for a reward. And this is not only statewide, but nationwide. It works the same at the campus level. Each student or an adult who works at that campus who witnesses or observes something, anything related to crime or even a student code violation, may report a tip, remain anonymous, and after it's investigated, within 3 or 4 days, they can call back with the code that they're given. And if the information they gave was correct, they can receive a reward.
And that is, to me, that is so important because a lot of people want to help, but they're just afraid. It may be a family member that's involved that they're calling in the information about. You know, maybe someone that would be dangerous to them if they knew that they had kind of snitched on them. But it's not snitching. It's you're trying to make your community safer, and this is a great way to do it.
Exactly, and that is one of the things that Texas is aiming at. We are conducting a campaign that says tipping ain't snitching.
And I like it.
This is aimed at people who try, because there was a couple of guys who were trying to, on the internet, give people the idea that if you gave tips to any organization, the cops or Crime Stoppers or anyone else, Silent Observer or their other programs, that you were a snitch. And we put up another PSA, public service announcement, that actually denied that, because what you're doing is keeping your community, your school, your students, mm-hmm. your future, even your border and the United States crime-free and safer.
That's right, especially you guys down there in Texas. That's a big deal, you know.
Yes.
You see, yeah.
We have a major drug war going on right across the river. My office is at 2002 San Bernardo in Laredo, and that is 20 blocks from the bridge, which crosses the Rio Grande River into Nuevo Laredo, Mexico. And there is a major drug war going on right now between three cartels, actually, because they are fighting for the IH-35 corridor. We're the largest land port in the United States. Therefore, this is the straightest shot all the way up to Chicago and Canada.
Going through your town.
Going through our town. We are the largest port of entry, yes. And so they're fighting for control of it. And there had been a sort of truce called for the last couple of years. It was an uneasy truce. But after some reporters, a television reporter was killed as she was reporting a crime on camera.
Oh.
And there were AK-47 attacks and grenade attacks at local newspaper offices. So they effectively shut down the press. And so now everything is kept quiet. No one knows what's happening, how many are killed, etc. El Paso has very, very out in the open news. We do not. People are afraid to speak up. The last police officer that spoke up, he had been given the title of chief, and 8 hours after he was named chief in Nuevo Laredo, Mexico, his head was blown off because he refused to take sides on the cartels.
Oh, my God. And here's this college right there in the middle of it. This is quite a job that you've got here to do.
Yes, it is. And we have all of the law enforcement agencies that are available stationed here at the border, except for maybe CIA. But everybody else that you can think of is here. We've got the DEA. We've got ICE, which is Immigration Customs Enforcement. We've got Customs and Border Patrol. We've got the FBI. We have the Homeland Security. We have our Laredo Police Department, our Sheriff's Department, and there's just simply not enough boots on the ground, as people in Texas call it, enough boots on the ground to cover this huge county. Our county is the second largest in the state of Texas.
Oh, gosh.
And up and down the river at any point, you can basically cross if you've got a boat or something to carry in, whatever it is you want to carry in or back. People carry drugs over this way, and people carry guns and money back to Mexico. Mm-hmm. And it goes on day and night. Whatever we catch during, or if we're lucky enough to catch during the working hours that our people are able to catch them, you can bet that at least another half is going by.
Mm.
Last year, Laredo Crime Stoppers
Daunting.
Took, and this is the adult program, seized $17.2 million worth of drugs. And
oh,
in the state, $39.2 million were collected. So, yes, we are the major port.
Wow. Now, what kind of crimes does the Campus Crime Stoppers mostly deal with?
Campus Crime Stoppers, thank God, has never dealt with murder, say, on campus. But we have just about everything else. Kids are selling drugs. Yes, there are gang members, and many of the gang members at schools, and not only here in Laredo, but all along the border, are dealing with working for the cartels across the river. There was a letter sent out by the Texas Department of Public Safety November 9th of this past year, and it clearly stated that they were warning parents to take care of their children, watch what they were doing, because they didn't want their children to be taken or sucked into the drug cartels by luring them with offering them expeditions, escalades, navigators, and offering them money, offering them drugs. And they named two of our students, former students here from Laredo, who had been sucked in and had become hitmen, had killed about 30 men between them. They were caught by the time they were 19, so imagine how young they were when they were first lured into it.
Boy.
And now this letter, official letter from DPS, went out to people along the border to watch their children because these kids were being lured by the drug cartels. We
sure,
are outmanned, we are outspent, and we are definitely outgunned.
Oh, my God. Gee, that's, yeah, I had no idea. You know, that's why I love doing this radio show, because, you know, I find out so many things. And what can we do? Now, we've got a little bit of a platform for you here. What can we do?
People need to be on the alert. It's not happening just on the border. These people are very well organized in terms of the drug cartel. And they have different towns, different points from here all the way to Canada, where they have already gotten their drug cartels established. They've gotten kids into their organizations there, people that are working for them. And I can say Houston, Atlanta, Tennessee, all the way to Chicago. There's a lot of towns that are already infiltrated by these gangs. And people have to open up their eyes, call the police when they see something. If they are suspicious, I'd rather have them be wrong than, I'm not going to do anything about it, and then later someone will be killed, or the drugs will cause an overdose and cause their death anyway.
Or call the Crime Stoppers if you're afraid to get involved.
Of course.
You know, if you're afraid to be, if you want to remain anonymous and do it that way, particularly in those areas where you're starting to see them coming onto the colleges more and more, you really got to get involved. Do you have any special programs or anything that you want to mention quickly that you're doing?
Well, Campus Crime Stoppers at this point is coordinating with all the law enforcement agencies, whatever tips we get, because many of our students hear things on the outside or even here at school about things that are going to happen that night or being sold somewhere else or having to do with the cartels or happening in one of the other border towns around here because the families are related all around. And we are very aggressively putting out public service announcements, offering rewards, asking for help. We have a website. There are text tips accepted. There are website anonymous tips accepted. We are working as hard as we can and also working to get grant money. We have gotten several donations from our sheriff from seized funds, restitution. We get money from local corporations that are worried about our youth. And we are very happy to report that we are being supported. The school district supports us completely and provides a free office with all of the machinery that goes with it, the fax line, the phone line, et cetera, except for our hotlines. Those have to be paid by Crime Stoppers in order to deal with the Texas law. The people who are exempt from turning in information to anyone in a court except for a judge in his chambers are the people that are Crime Stoppers officially certified programs.
Okay, great. Now, give out that website so people can take a look at it.
Okay, it's www.laredoisd.org/Crime Stoppers.
And is there a phone number that you want to give out?
Yes, 956-744-0083.
Okay, great. Estella, thank you so much for being on the show with me today. I'm going to be putting links to all my guests on the Voice America host page so that if you want more information about any of these show topics or you want to get in touch with one of the Crime Stoppers groups, you can go directly from there. And guess what? That's a wrap for now. But thank you so much. And never fear, you and I will be doing this again next week, same time, same channel, when I'll have more stories that demand to be told, more important hot crime topics, and, of course, lots of tips and resources for you. It'd be a crime not to listen. So stay tuned and stay safe.
We hope you got some useful information and inspiration this week on Crime Prevention 101. Susan Bartlestone invites you to join us again next Thursday at 5 p.m. Pacific at 8 p.m. Eastern Time here on Voice America. If you want to learn more about Susan's guests, sign up for her newsletter, or find out about upcoming teleseminars and workshops, go to www.crimeprevention101.com today. Have a great week and a safe week.